What are the sources and origins of writings like the Book of Mormon, the Quran, and the Gospel of Thomas, and how do they compare to the Bible? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August is One Word, Many Writings, a study of the origins of religious writings. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can find out more about One Word, Many Writings by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. One Word, Many Writings by Dr. Adam Francisco.
Almighty God, Father of the whole human family, we thank you and ask your blessing as we gather for this uniquely American moment.
The Supreme Court has said that it's cruel and unusual punishment to give the death penalty to a rapist. And I don't think that an innocent child conceived in rape deserves the death penalty either.
We so often downplay this as if it's something unimportant to have word and sacrament in the church, as if receiving this gospel is sort of just something we do here. No, it is who we are.
Homeschool families love issues, etc. We have issues.
It definitely was a big story. There's no doubt about it. You could read about it in the New York Times. You could read about it in the Los Angeles Times. I saw a little bit of the video. Girls in miniskirts at the front of a very ornate Russian Orthodox church. They had some kind of hoods on their head, and they were on their knees. They were appearing to cross themselves. They were obviously saying something and causing quite a ruckus. Now, what was going on there? That seems unclear. That sounds like a spectacle. It sounds like some kind of a protest. What were they protesting? Did the press get it right? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 28th of August. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org will be our guest for the first half hour of the program. We'll talk about media coverage of a two-year prison sentence that was given to a punk rock band. And they did it for a video that was shot in an Orthodox cathedral in Moscow. We'll find out what the story really is. After that, Pastor Marcus Zill will join us. We'll talk about pastoral care for college students. Lots of people dropped off those freshmen this last weekend and in the weeks before. We'll talk about pastoral care for those new students and the other college students. Then in the second hour of Issues Etc., on this Tuesday afternoon, Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, co-host of the national radio show called The White Horse Inn, will be our guest. We're going to spend the entire hour talking about Martin Luther's rediscovery of the gospel. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Here's the headline from the New York Times. Anti-Putin stunt earns punk band 2 years in jail. What's missing from the headline and from the story that it caps?
The main thing that's missing from the story is some sense of where this event occurred and what the location might mean to significant numbers of ordinary Russians. You know, whether or not they are supporters of Vladimir Putin or not, for ordinary Russians, they would have known something about the history of this cathedral and why it was chosen. And quite frankly, this is, as Get Religion would say, this is a haunted story, and people didn't seem to take very seriously the role that religion played in it.
So I watched some of the video. There's all sorts of, you know, cell phone video of this. Hooded girls, apparently, and the part I saw, Terry, was they appeared to be standing before an altar or some kind of a frontal piece in a church. They were on their knees. They were, I think, kind of mockingly crossing themselves. What was actually done and said there?
Well, this is what I think is the most intriguing thing about it, just from the viewpoint of the press. I'm not sure we know exactly what happened. I mean, we have the video that they released of this punk prayer in which they claim to be asking the Virgin Mary to remove Putin from office. But when you actually look at some of the various translations of what they're saying, That's in there, but so is some just pretty virulently anti-Orthodox and anti-Christian language. Then you get into the fact that the video that's so famous about this actually seems to be chopped up images from a number of different appearances. It seems like they may have invaded another church at a different period of time in an incident that, to my knowledge, has received little or no press attention at all here on this side of the United States. In other words, these people are kind of repeat offenders. So that's a factor. But here's the main point I would like to make. The press reports here in the United States did mention that the judge, the woman who judged this case, read for something like 60 minutes of factual details and reactions, and I've seen almost none of that make it into print. So I'm willing to say at this point that I'm not sure we know what happened. I've seen some online commentary based on confusion about what a common Orthodox phrase is, that something occurred on the altar. Now, when the Orthodox, just a reminder to your listeners, I am a convert to Eastern Orthodoxy, when the Orthodox say the phrase on the altar, they don't necessarily mean that something happened on top of the physical object that is the holy altar, inside the altar iconostasis. So let me explain some terms here so that people will know more about it. What you described earlier, these women are dancing and bowing and everything directly in front of the iconostasis that separates the altar area of the church from the rest of the church. Now, to make things more complex, in many Russian churches, as you would know, in many American churches, there is kind of an altar rail. Now, when Orthodox receive communion, we normally receive it standing up, but yet many Russian churches have this something that would look more like a Catholic church or an even Anglican church, have an altar rail that, say, might be 10 or 15 feet out from the iconostasis that defines the altar itself. Now, the space between that rail and the iconostasis is certainly considered, should be treated with tremendous reverence. And in some churches, no one but clergy or those assisting the clergy would go in there. But it's not the same thing as actually going through the holy doors and into the altar itself, you know, in terms of defiling the cathedral. So it appears that these young women were between the altar rail and the iconostasis. Yet I've seen some writing online that suggests that they actually went inside the altar. That's the kind of detail that you would have wanted to have seen in a story out of the trial itself, because going inside the altar would have been considered an intensely blasphemous act, even more so than dancing in front of the altar outside those doors. See, when you look at the video, you see the icons and you see those golden doors. The altar itself is actually inside those doors. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Okay, so that the technical term is iconostasis. Now, in an Anglican or in a Western culture, this might also be called a rood screen or an icon screen. It's kind of implied in many Anglican churches or Catholic churches as kind of like a beginning of the altar. But in Western architecture, there isn't this sharp division between the altar area and the rest of the church, not nearly to the degree you would have in Russia. My point is not that I know what happened. My point is that I don't know what happened, and neither does anyone else who's reading these stories. And neither does anyone who's watched the video. We're only seeing a few seconds of what happened. So the main thing that I would kind of hold up as a beef against journalists and against reporters at this point is that no one seems very interested in the actual incident that occurred in the cathedral. They jumped straight to its political implications, you know, and to Madonna and Sir Paul McCartney and everybody else reacting about it as some sort of musical or First Amendment freedom situation. The irony is that in Russia, almost everybody other than Putin seems to think that this thing was blown out of proportion. I mean, the church has called for the forgiving of the sentences against these women themselves. Yet it's important to know that what they were charged with was essentially a crime against religion, not some sort of political crime. It's very similar. The image I've used for people is try to imagine a group of Aryan Nations punks in Germany invading a synagogue-era synagogue that has, a Holocaust-era synagogue that has been rebuilt and restored, and getting up on the bima, getting up on the altar area or the area closest to the Torah, and doing something like this, attacking Judaism. That would be some kind of the comparable situation. Because the cathedral all of this is occurring in is not just the National Cathedral. It's the cathedral that the Soviets blew up in 1930. I mean, the actual national church of the Russian Orthodox Church of Russia, its biggest and most important cathedral, was actually imploded and exploded by the Russians in 1930. What you're seeing now is a rebuilt version of the church in memory of all those who died, of all the violence that was done against the church, of all the blasphemies that were committed in those churches. And one of the things the Soviets used to do is exactly what happened in this case. They would do very blasphemous acts in front of the altar or on the altars of these Orthodox churches, the most infamous of which, it was the Bolsheviks' tradition at times to where if a priest would not cooperate with them, they would kill the priest on top of his own altar, thus defiling the altar as well as killing the priest. So for Russians, all of these kinds of memories and all of these kinds of ghosts from the past are surrounding this act, not just the outrageous behavior of Vladimir Putin.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, founder and editor of GetReligion.org, and he also writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. When we come back, 10 more minutes with him, we'll talk about how difficult this is of a journalistic task to cover such a complex story, especially from the outside looking in.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
We have a special premium for first-time donors to Issues Etc. It's the new Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio mousepad. We'll send it to you for your first-time donation to Issues Etc. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also make your first-time gift by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Thanks for your support.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Well, Justin has completed his summer work at Sylvan Learning Center in Edwardsville. His reading comprehension has improved more than 3 grade levels, and his vocabulary has increased almost an entire grade level. Sylvan Learning Center of Edwardsville has a 6-week back-to-school boot camp. Their phone number, 618-656-0500. 618-656-0500. Emily has 4 weeks left at Sylvan. A report on her progress next time.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
The Truro Cathedral Choir with the hymn, O Christ, Our Hope, Our Heart's Desire. playing right now at Lutheran Public Radio. That's LutheranPublicRadio.org, sacred music for the world, 24/7. Some of the very best choral pieces from every century of the church's history at LutheranPublicRadio.org. We're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of a 2-year prison sentence that was given to a punk rock band for a video that was shot in an Orthodox cathedral in Moscow. Folks, I hope you're listening very carefully. When I first saw this video and I first saw the coverage, I thought it was just a Putin protest. I really did, you know, for lack of a better word, I just discounted where it took place and what that might have meant in addition to a political protest. I think it's only here on Issues Etc. you'll get the kind of perspective that Terry Mattingly is bringing to this story. Terry, this is a difficult journalistic task. The story is very complicated, obviously, and if the media is going to get it right, they're really going to have to do some hard work.
Well, at the very least, they'd have to have people in their bureau that speak Russian. But I would assume that the major bureaus, you know, of the U.S. media, you know, from the New York Times to the Washington Post to CNN, whatever, I'm sure they have Russian speakers, you know, in their bureaus, you know, which means that if you're sitting there listening to this. To this judge read page after page of testimony, you know, about what physically happened and what people said happened and conflicting testimonies and whatever, it should have been covered as a trial involving some kind of hooliganism or blasphemous act in a cathedral. It should have been covered as a religious trial, not at least in part, in addition to being covered as a political act and a political statement about Putin. There are many, many people in Russia who totally oppose Vladimir Putin, who were appalled at the coverage of this event and the fact that the public just doesn't seem to have been given the information it needed to know to understand what happened.
Is there any, at least in the Western coverage, is there a double standard with, or perhaps one peeking out from behind the curtain, of this happening in a Christian church as opposed to what may happen in other religious settings?
Well, it's very easy to go there. I think it's hard not to imagine, like I said, that if you had, say, some sort of situation, heaven forbid, in which you had right-wing Christians or something invading a mosque, or something here in the United States. Let's say that let's go for symbolism, since it's very important to understand the symbolism of this cathedral. Let's say that you had right-wing anti-Palestinians or radical Zionists or something. Somebody invades the Ground Zero Mosque and attempts in some way to do an anti-Muslim skit of some kind. I would think that at the very least those people would be charged and sentenced with some sort of ordinary violence against private property, you know, and whatever. And those are the laws that I think these people were convicted of. The other possibility is that in the post 9/11 era, in parts of the world, we've had statutes created, ironically, by the political left, in most cases, in which people can be charged with crimes against religion. This has primarily been done as a way of combating anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. Yet the irony is that appears to be the laws that brought the really harsh sentences against the people in this punk rock, you know, theater troupe. So that, to me, is one of the ironies here, is they appear to have violated the kind of anti-religious hate legislation that tends to come from the political and cultural left, even though these people are clearly on the left. It gave Putin and his government another tool to use against them, in case. I've mentioned, you know, you have the symbolic case of a Holocaust synagogue. Try to imagine that. Try to imagine some kind of blasphemous desecration of the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem. I mean, are we assuming these people would at least get minimal sentences, you know, for trespassing? I would assume so.
Now, we've talked largely about the New York Times coverage of this, but you have touched upon some of your concerns regarding the Los Angeles Times. You say it was worse than the New York Times.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it didn't even seem to discuss the religious content at all. I mean, at least in some of the stories, you could have a paragraph in which you were told that the judge said this was primarily an attack on religion and read pages after page of testimony. You at least had a chance to know what you didn't know. Does that make sense? Then a lot of other places just treated this as some sort of almost joking, entertainment news, bizarre feature because of the name of the band and everything else. I mean, so, yeah, some was worse than others, but in the best-case scenario, you at least had a chance to understand where this occurred and why some people cared about it. But in terms of factual details, very, very little coverage bothered with the facts at all.
Is part of this, well, two things. One, as you have often said, in journalism, while they fail to understand religion, if there is the slightest hint of politics there, that they do get.
Yeah.
And also the fact that the Soviet Union and now Russia has been such an insular culture for so many years, and the Russian Orthodox Church even more so.
Yeah.
We just don't know what that thing is.
Well, I mean, to some degree, it's a multiple thing. There's no singular thing there. Through a coincidence, I would obviously a God thing coincidence, I happened to be in Russia 10 days after the fall of the Soviet Union, after the events that led to the fall. I was handing out Bibles, you know, in the Kremlin the day they voted to disband the Soviet Union. So I was right there. This was before I was Orthodox, but I still had some amazing chances to meet Orthodox people and see what was going on. And a very famous Russian Orthodox priest, Alexander Borisov, who is known for his work primarily with evangelicals and with others. At that time, I mean, literally within days of the fall of the Soviet Union, he said, people are going to have to understand how complex the Orthodox Church in Russia is going to be for several generations. And the way he stated it was, you know, we have bishops who actively cooperated with the KGB, and they may not be believers at all. He said, then we have other bishops who were forced to cooperate with the KGB. They did so, but they have stopped. They have cut that part of their life off. He said, then there's the people he respected the most. These are the bishops who cooperated with the KGB, and they have publicly repented of their actions. To their priests and to their people, they've repented of what they did. And he said, then fourth, we now have bishops who have never cooperated with the state at all. So when people say that this act was somehow symbolic of corruption in the Russian Orthodox Church, that's partially accurate. But it's inaccurate if you say that the Russian Orthodox Church, as some sort of monolithic force, is, to use the words I heard more than one journalist use, in bed with Putin. Yeah, church and state are definitely not separated in Russia the way we would hope they are and pray they are here in the United States. But that doesn't mean that the whole Russian Orthodox Church is corrupt. And that certainly doesn't mean that that was the only thing this trial was about or that this act was about. Americans just don't understand what it might be like to live in a country this soon after the greatest persecution in the history of the Christian faith, which is what happened to Orthodoxy in Russia and in Eastern Europe. I'm not sure many Americans understand the symbols that were being played with here.
With only about a minute here, Terry, is it also a tendency, and this is the general tendency when it comes to religion coverage, to simplify, to reduce it to its lowest common denominator? And in this case, it sounds like there just isn't one.
Yeah, well, yeah. But my point, again, is the single most important thing is that at some point it would have helped to have known what these women were convicted of. Just the simple facts of the case, instead of simply presuming that the Putin government alone crushed them because they're opposed to his regime. Certainly that is a part of it, certainly that is a part of the over-the-top verdict, which some have hailed. But there is way more to what happened in that cathedral than that. And that's part of the verdict, it's a part of the conviction, and it's a part of the crimes that were committed.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for the Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you very much for being our guest.
Hey, good to talk to you again.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Marcus Zill. I was looking at Facebook over the last couple weekends and noticed a lot of my friends, that just shows the age that I'm reaching, are taking those kids off to college, sometimes for the first time, sometimes for the second or the third time. It's always difficult as a parent. You take your Christian kid off to college or university, and when you drop them off and you drive away, you relinquish an awful lot of responsibility. What do you do next? Do you give them a call on Saturday night and say, hey, remember, tomorrow's Sunday, go to church? Do you call them on Sunday afternoon and say, did you go to church? What is a Christian parent to do when the college year rolls around? Pastor Marcus Zill will be our guest right after this. We're joined now by listener Rocky. Rocky, tell us about the tax benefits of donating stocks to issues, etc.
What we discovered in talking with our tax people and our stock advisors is that it would be beneficial for us to be giving our charitable donations by this means, by giving stocks, which meant that we could give a stock and essentially say if you gave a $100 stock, it's straight money to whatever charitable organization you want to give. As opposed to cashing it out, we'd only be able to give whatever portion was left over after the tax consequences.
How would you advise our listeners if they're interested in donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds?
They need to go and talk to their stockbroker or the tax person, and I think they'll find out it makes a heck of a lot of economic sense. And you're much better steward with your money, because what you're ending up doing is stretching the dollars that you're able to give donation-wise, and you're able to give a whole lot more directly to those people that you want to support. And you're able to preserve much more for yourself using the laws that have been provided for it.
Rocky, is there anything that we left out that you want to tell our listeners?
Well, the only thing that you've missed is that people really need to support Issues, etc. This is a terrific way to do it in a very economical way. It's a way to do it and be good stewards of the resources that God has blessed people with. And I would encourage everyone to support Issues, etc. in every possible way that they can. And if this is available to them, I'd encourage them to look into it, because it not only will help them, but it'll help Issues, etc. also.
To find out how to reduce your tax burden and support this worldwide outreach by donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds, talk to your stockbroker or tax advisor, and then call Craig here at Lutheran Public Radio, 618-223-8385.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, etc.
At SteadfastLutherans.org, we've been called contentious. We've even been called the brothers of John the curmudgeon, and we may well be curmudgeonly sometimes. But we always have the best and clearest voices in confessional Lutheranism. Articles from Molly Hemingway, Martin Nolan, Clement Preuss, Todd Wilkin, and a host of regular contributors. Come check out the new Lutheran media. Always clear, always concise, always confessionally Lutheran. SteadfastLutherans.org.
Greetings from your friends at Zion Lutheran Church, Muscoda, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues, etc. Zion Lutheran is a welcoming, family-friendly church that's firmly grounded on the unchanging truth of God's Word. We receive God's gifts of grace in a timeless, reverent way each Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Zion Lutheran is located at 101 South Railway in Muscoda, Illinois. Zion Lutheran is a church home that's both faithful and friendly, and you'll be warmly welcomed. For more information, call 618-566-7345.